you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Haw.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Well, we have the 100 losses for the White Sox. We have the Cubs taking 2 out of 3 and still not gaining enough ground on that third wild card spot. So where do you want to begin?
I'm just curious, how long are they going to lose 100? Is there a plan to sort of keep doing this year in and year out? They don't seem like they've gotten any better. They were terrible last year. Is this next year too?
It's a great question. I think you take the how long they're going to lose 100 to how long are they going to be, how long is it going to take for them to be a credible team again?
Right.
How long is it going to take for fans to feel they're watching something that's growing, that's getting better? And maybe they go together, Mike, maybe they go together next year. Again, I listen to your conversation talking about the White Sox and the pitching. You know, that is certainly been the quickest way for most organizations to get better, by building a young rotation of pitchers, going out there and getting them, developing them, drafting them, signing them, developing them. It's going to take a while. It's not going to be next year. It won't. Again, you like to have hope for a team, but the hope is that you're going to see better players at 35th and Shields playing for the White Sox very soon, hopefully by next year.
So does that mean they sit out free agency? Does that mean they are not aggressive in trading for positional players that might be offensively dangerous? Because you can talk all you want about the pitching, and we will continue to, but you're going to need to score runs, and they're going to have some proven bats if they want to be, you know, ever regain that credibility.
Well, David, what would you do if you were the general manager right now and you went to the owner? What would you say other than, okay, we're going to be down another 10% in as far as fans coming to the ballpark. We're taking 10% off to allow them to come to the ballpark for a cheaper rate. We know it's going to take a little bit while longer. But what would you do to – is there a quick fix for the White Sox that you would do?
I would say you have to spend money to make money, and you would have to be aggressive in a way that you haven't before. I'd want to change the entire – culture of the organization by doing that, announcing that, and then following through with that, because it's not working the other way. So I know it's only money and it's easy to spend somebody else's, but you've got to be serious about spending if you ever want to get serious about winning.
Look, Chris Getz was handed a big bowl of nothing, okay? He has started a new group of front office people. And he was told, you know, this is going to take a while. He told them the way you want to do it, it's going to take a while. I think you look back at what started all this, and that was, you know, a complete failure of an organization. Wasn't Chris Getz, except for the fact that he was in the minor leagues, trying to help younger players get better. But the reality of the plan that they had and the window that they have never really existed. I mean, we saw really a year and a half of decent baseball from the White Sox from 2017 when they started the rebuild through now, and it was just a plan that didn't work. And a lot of the players that they signed out of Latin America and Cuba, that plan just fell apart on them, you know. So where do you go from here? Again, fans have a right to be angry. Fans have a right to be upset about it. But it's just not going to happen overnight. And you can ignore the White Sox if you want for a while, move away. It doesn't work for White Sox fans. They love their baseball. They love their Southside team.
I'm just curious, why do you believe the Cubs can't get the sweep? What is it that's missing here that they can't get that extra hit, or they can't get a sweep, or what is going awry with this team to the point where you look at a game like last night's and yesterday, and you say, well, they're better than these guys, here it comes, and then it doesn't happen.
Mike, well, the mentality is different now. Let's say this was May, right, and they won 2 out of 3 in Florida. You'd be pretty happy with that, right? I mean, you wouldn't be panic time or worry time. But with only 31 games left or 30 games left, you have to do better because of the hole they dug themselves in. So they are playing better baseball. The reality is, you know, they've won a lot of games here. They've won a bunch of series, 6 out of 7 series, but they haven't gained anything because of the hole they're in and because of the behind the third wild card. There's only 30 games left. So you can play really good baseball the rest of the way and really not gain on that third wild card. You do not play any of the teams in front of you. You do not have the tiebreaker against any of the teams ahead of you. It's a big hole. I think that what the Cubs are playing for now is to show for next year, you know, more than anything else, that these guys are reliable players that had a down year for 2 or 3 months, and that Jed Hoyer in the front office can rely on them again offensively next year to be a part of the equation. Part of the deal this year, and you have to kind of remember this, and I know you guys are tired of hearing it, but this was really a team that was doing player development all year. You had catcher, first base, third base, center field, all in player development, players all playing for the first time on a regular basis in the major leagues. So, you know, part of this was, well, our big guys are going to have to carry us while these young guys are learning how to play baseball at the major league level. Well, that didn't happen. You had injuries. You had guys that had down years. You are who you are right now. You're right there a game under 500, and, you know, you're hoping that you can have a strong finish. I think it's an 83-85 win team. I just don't think it's going to be enough.
The development you talk about at the catcher and in center field has really paid off in the month of August. You look at what Miguel Amaya has done, and he really seems to have turned the corner offensively because of some switches and changes to his mechanics. Pete Crow Armstrong has been on fire for the last month, to the point where, Bruce, I wonder, do you think that in the interest of development, they may try him leading off for parts of September moving forward? Because if he's going to be as good as they want him to be, doesn't it make sense for him to be a top-of-the-order guy?
Yeah, but he's really not that guy yet. He doesn't walk a lot, okay? He's still learning the strike zone. He's doing a much better job of handling the inside fastball, something he was striking out on and grounding out and popping up from before. So he's still in that player development. I think that Council's done a terrific job of bringing him along and resisting the idea. And I've had it too. I think every baseball Cub fan and baseball observers have the same idea. Hey, he's got great speed. He can add a run for you at the beginning of the game. Council, you know, is looking for this player to develop more before he moves him up. He batted seventh yesterday. That's moving him up. But his lineup is based on, can you get me a point right away? Are you going to strike out? You know, he has... If you look at his his lineup on a daily basis, it's almost based exactly on OPS and how it lines up. It's almost exactly whose OPS is the best. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yep, it's pretty much that way. So, I don't know if he's going to experiment with that toward the end of the year here. He's trying to win as many games as he can, and he's going to put out the lineup he feels is best suited for that. Right now, it's not Pete Crow Armstrong on the top.
I just wonder, as we look at them and where they're at and what's still possible, do you get a sense somehow, Bruce, that this is going to happen, or do you feel like, well, it's just not their year? I mean, there's still a world of possibility. It's just, for some reason, you can't see that step forward for some reason.
Well, the way that Council's got him focused, I like it. You know, again, he's been on the same, you know, trying to educate myself and the rest of the media every day. 27 outs. We don't care who's closing games out. We need to concentrate on the game each day. I know in sports we get tired of hearing that, but he has really epitomized that with his own people. Okay, his coaching staff knows it. The players have come to understand it, that there's not a doghouse for Craig Council if you're not playing well. He's going to try to find a way to make you function and do something good for the team the best way that he knows how, trying to find the best way you can. And I think that's been lost in the fact that this has been a disappointing year record-wise. But Council is certainly the right guy. He certainly knows how to get the best out of his players. Unfortunately, you know, the record is not indicative of what's going on over there. But I can tell you that what you're paying him, he's worth what you're paying him. It's just not there record-wise this year.
Bruce, for people who weren't listening Saturday morning when we had Chris Getz on, how did you interpret, what do you think he was saying after I asked him about the plan for Garrett Crochet for the remainder of this season?
Well, I think he's going to throw another couple games and then be shut down. He's right at around 130 innings. I think you get him to about 140 innings and you say sayonara. He did say that, Grady Sizemore this week did say that they're going to keep bringing him down. So at some point, you know, is it 3 innings and 60 pitches? Why bother the rest of the year? You had a great year, a healthy year. I think you have to underline, get him out of there healthy. You're not accomplishing anything by right now throwing him out there 60 pitches in 3 innings. We already know that he's a terrific pitcher. We already know he's a great competitor. We already know he's got a bright future. The most important thing now, September 1st, is, you know, sit him down the rest of the year, and you got a terrific number one starter starting in 2025, or you have the top pitcher on the pitching market outside of Burns, the free agent, and he's going to cost you a hell of a lot less except in player inventory. That's where he's going to cost you. He's going to cost you 3 top young players from another organization. So when you rounding this back up, guys, how did the White Sox get better? They make a great trade for Crochet. They make a great trade for Robert. The offseason, 2 of the most probably sought-after guys. I know a lot of people don't like Robert. There are tons of scouts out there that would love to be able to acquire him. There are GMs that would love to have Robert. Again, is it important for Robert to get through this season healthy? 100%. You know, get him through this year and then see what you have as far as bringing back inventory for your rebuild. It's not automatic that you do it correctly, but Chris Getz and his people are going to try to do that.
I'm just curious, you know, we had a caller earlier who said that he was waiting for Jerry to come out and say something. He doesn't really want to talk about this, right? He just would rather not kind of deal with that.
What would you say?
I'm sorry? If
what
I were him?
Say? Yeah, I, no, I what would he say? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, team's for sale, but obviously he's not going to say that.
No, I think the team probably is for sale at some point here. You know, you're going to have, you basically have a team, an entire organization that's being rebuilt. I think you're going to see a new direction that the Latin American view of how to sign and develop players is going to change dramatically over the winter. I think you'll probably have a new director for Latin American, you know, the head of Latin American, you know, scouting there. So it's evolving. You know, the one question that that David and I asked Chris on Saturday, Mike, is, you know, do you expect to have a different outlook? Do you expect to have different players coming in? You know, it was hard for him to really answer that. I think what we got out of it was it's not going to be through free agency. It's going to be through scouting, trading, you know, being stealth about bringing players in who are trying to revamp their career, much like they did this year. So it's going to take a little while.
You talked about Craig Counsell being worth the money, and I think that's open for debate at the end of a season that the Cubs, you know, so far have been very disappointing. And I wonder, Bruce, what is lacking, do you think, moving into next year? We talked a little bit about this, but I think he misses a guy like Pat Murphy as much as you could miss somebody, because the contrast in their personalities, I think, created a good yin and yang for the Brewers over all those years. I wonder, does there need to be somebody like that on the staff? Maybe we're not aware because we're not privy to all of those conversations, but in the offseason, do you think that Craig Counsell will realize just how much he missed having somebody like that to lean on and also to provide maybe a buffer between him and the team?
Yeah, I don't think he needs a buffer, but I think he needs, you know, the best coaches he can have. I think the coaches are good with the Cubs. He might want to have a different idea coming in. You know, I think if we think back to when Joe Maddon came in, he didn't really bring a ton of people with him. I think it was Davey Martinez was the one, the guy that stood out that he brought in. Otherwise, you know, it was pretty much a collaboration between him and the front office as far as the coaching staff went. So I think he's pretty secure with the coaches he has, but I think he'll bring in a few new guys. And, you know, again, the one thing that we missed, I think, all year is he's coming in new. He knows nobody, no players, no coaches. You know, they know him from waving across the field when they play against him. That's not it. So it does take time to develop these relationships, and for more importantly, for Counsell, who's got four more years ahead of him, to establish himself in the organization. You know, so with him and Hoyer, it's been a learning experience, getting to know each other. Doesn't happen overnight. Same thing with the players. So I think you're going to see a little bit different handle that he has on it coming in next year than he did this year.
It was interesting to see Javi Baez back on the north side, still in Chicago, but then Jason Hayward ends up being released. And, you know, we just had talked so much about the former Cubs and who had a great career and who hasn't, who struggled, who hasn't. And we kind of agreed that Hayward had a pretty good run for himself with the Dodgers, but obviously it's not going to end with a title.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, there is some affirmation for certainly the Chicago Cubs and their front office about the fact that they couldn't get all of these guys signed. And the one regret they might have is certainly the Kyle Schwarber situation. But all these other guys' careers, you know, have really, you know, dissipated to the point where there's not much left for, you know, Hayward, for Baez, for Bryant, for Rizzo. You know, most of these guys are looking at the end, even at 31 and 32, which is amazing that that's all Baez is. That's all Rizzo is. I mean, that's all Bryant is. Rizzo's 35. These guys, you know, their careers end earlier now. For whatever reason, the idea that at 31, 32, the best days are behind them, you know, that should, you know, the Cubs should get some credit for getting the most they could out of these guys and really not looking silly about getting rid of guys that helped you win a World Series.
Great stuff, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it,
guys. Bye. Have a great day.
That is our guy, Bruce Levine. Interesting.
Interesting, because I don't know if I'm ready to give the Cubs credit for getting rid of them. In a lot of those cases, those guys declined once they got paid.
Yeah.
Which is kind of human nature around professional sports. Right now, be the sixth caller to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670, and you can win a pair of tickets to see the Bernstein and Holmes live broadcast at Brick House in Wrigley on September 17th, 312-540-0670, for a seat for the Bernstein and Holmes show.
Molly and Holmes.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Taylor, really good edge guy in terms of the sack. He's had good sack production. We feel good about that. I think he brings a different skill set than we have out there in terms of the way he rushes. What I like most about him is his motor. He's got a great motor. He finishes. He needs some refinement at the top of the rush, which we'll work on. But he pursues and does the things, everything that everybody else does in the building that we expect and what we hold guys accountable to. Williams I had in Indianapolis, and he was a young guy back then, and I really commended him on his improvement he's made over the years. And he's done a really good job of refining his skill set and his pass rush. And him playing the run. He does a really good job, uses his length really well, and he does the same thing. We don't bring guys in here that don't like to play hard.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, that is Matt Eberflus, and he's telling you that that the Bears got better, that there are two trades over the weekend. Friday, they brought in Daryl Taylor from Seattle for a sixth-round pick, a pass rusher who did not fit the change of scheme there, and then on Saturday it was a sixth rounder to Cleveland for Chris Williams, the defensive tackle, and a seventh round pick. And David, we had talked about the kind of concern we had about defensive tackle, the very fact that if you're talking about Matthew Judon, that means you need help in your pass rush. And it would seemingly be, you would think that they now are going to cut their team and they're not going to worry about making any more acquisitions on the defensive line. But, hey, if you got a chance to improve, you improve.
This is the way to do it. You don't want to wait until there are players on the discard pile and have to settle for those kind of players. Right. You want to get somebody that you have identified as a player like Daryl Taylor who will help you and can have double-digit sack potential. He had 9.5 with the Seahawks in one season. He's got 21.5 in the last three. That doesn't mean he's going to be a guy that automatically you pencil in for that, but you're trading for potential. You're trading for a rotational piece, a situational pass rusher. You need help opposite Montez Sweat. It also allows you the flexibility to move DeMarcus Walker inside to play defensive tackle on passing downs. Part of your nickel pass rush could be, you know, the edge rusher that is the freshest in the rotation, Austin Booker, who had a great finale in the preseason.
I can't believe we haven't done a segment yet on the spin move.
The spin move was great. We talked a lot about it on Friday. The spin move was special, and it showed you the kind of athleticism and explosion that he can offer from the edge. So you have the combination of Taylor and Booker and Walker, and then you have, you know, obviously on rundowns you don't want DeMarcus Walker necessarily inside, but it gives you flexibility. And Montez Sweat, you know, Brad Biggs made an interesting point back in the 7 o'clock hour. He can't play every snap, and he won't be in there every snap, and he's going to need some breaks too to give him the ability to rush when he is fresh legs and he's well rested between series. So I think the Bears got better because Ryan Poles identified specific needs and went out and got them.
312-644-6767. Let's get to Don. Don's on the west side. Hey, Don. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I just had a response back to some of you, the takes or the guests on the show. Like I say, once again, I'm just a meatball from the west side, but I just think that this team is a better team than last year's team. You know, having unknowns is like having no credit. It's the same as bad credit. Caleb right now has no credit, so there's a reasonable skepticism, you know. So I guess if you put Golf or Love with our defense, then we'll be Super Bowl hunting too. You know, I don't understand that. They say that, I believe the last guest said that that we're going to lose games because of Caleb. Well, every top 10 quarterback has cost their team a win by trying to make a play. Jordan Love threw a pick in the playoffs to end Green Bay season last year, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of a push to me. Also, with the worst team, we should have swept Detroit last year. You know, should have, could have, would have, is just that. Whether you're the Bears or the Lions or you know, Green Bay in the playoffs. You know, Sean King, you know, just to revert back to that, you know, point out the pocket plays where there was a wide open wide receiver and 18 held the ball where he didn't pull the trigger. Don't just say these things and just that. You know, it's kind of like a lazy take. But all right, guys.
All right, buddy. We were talking to Russ Tucker about Green Bay and Detroit winning in the playoffs. You know what went through my head was they might have won. The Detroit Lions might have won that game if Dan Campbell wasn't making wacky fourth down calls. Like that was a bad moment for him, as it turned out. I don't know. I don't know if I feel like the Bears can't win if they are stuck in this division. I don't know how I feel. I got to see how the season unfolds.
I think they have a defense that allows them to feel like they will be in every game. Now, you got to work the margins. Things have to go right. You need to have players that can come through in the clutch. What we're saying about Caleb Williams is purely a projection. It's a projection based on opinions that are offered by people who do this for a living. It's sure. Also our own eye test sure. That he has passed this preseason. You have a defense, though, that is unlikely and less likely to have a letdown than your rookie quarterback. And I think that's what Ross Tucker is trying to say.
Yeah,
Don makes
I
a good
agree.
Point. Even the best quarterbacks have bad days and make poor decisions that are costly. Maybe to the point where it costs you, it's a difference between victory and defeat. That's what you accept when you have a quarterback, though, as good as Caleb Williams appears he can be.
Let's try Jeff. Jeff is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Piggybacking kind of on what Don was talking about with Sean King, I can kind of see where he's coming from, just because if you look at our preseason, Caleb played against the second string defense in the second game, and we didn't get a touchdown other than his running one in. And in fact, I don't think we've had a touchdown with him at quarterback other than the one he ran in when the first team's on there. But I am a Caleb guy now. I used to be build a better team, trade the pick. But I'm with them because they got Odunze, they got Caleb. So what I hope to see and what I've seen that's promising from Caleb in the pocket is, and two throws in the two games he's played, that he's moved around the pocket, stayed in the pocket, kept his eyes up, and made throws. One was actually an incomplete, but I liked it because I saw him actually do the things I want to see him do, like Aaron Rodgers does, like Tom Brady does, like Peyton Manning does. We need the guy that moves around in the pocket and can make the throws. He can make the wild plays. We've seen that, so that's good. So I say temper our expectations a little. And see where we go with it, because all we've seen is preseason and we've seen vanilla offense. When they get into the games where they're running their offense more and hopefully he's getting on it, we see a little bit more and bear down, right?
Thanks, Jeff.
I find it really interesting that he was a guy that was like, trade the pick, get rid of the number one overall pick and try to build another team. Yeah, at some point you got to decide on the quarterback and take him, right?
You mean Sean King?
No.
Or Jeff?
No, Jeff himself said that he was initially in favor
right.
of getting rid of the pick and building the team up. And then now he feels like maybe they made the right move by taking Caleb Williams. At some point, you got to fire. You know, you don't want to continually be the team that's afraid to take the quarterback.
Yeah,
right?
You have to do that. And they did. They acted with conviction.
Yeah.
And they did their homework. And they're going to benefit from all of that due diligence. Definitely. And as for Sean King, I mean, it gets a lot of attention. And I think that you have to be willing to accept criticism. And I think we are. But it comes down to this for me. What he said was valid and defensible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something that would not have been the way I would have presented it. I would not have led with that. That's also like something you would include after pointing out what I think has been the predominant impression. The lasting impression that Caleb Williams has made this preseason is not that he has really, really struggled, which is what Sean King was suggesting. To me,
no, he has.
The more indelible impression has been like he's going to be really, really good,
yeah.
But he needs to do this, but he needs to do that. Those things are valid and defensible.
Yeah,
I just don't think that those are the things that I think of first when I watch Caleb Williams play.
No, I mean, listen, we don't know yet what the issues shall be. We don't know yet how, you know, we know generally speaking what goes on with rookie quarterbacks and where they kind of suffer, if you will, where they kind of have their bad moments. We understand that, mm-hmm. but I don't take it as like a lock that something's going to go wrong with Caleb Williams. He looks pretty good to me.
Well, it didn't go wrong with C.J. Stroud. He had a couple games that were regrettable and a couple of those kind of games that you would fall under the category of a rookie quarterback struggling.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. C.J. Stroud, though, still finished the season in a position where some people consider him going into year two one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL.
That's awesome.
And Mike Sando from The Athletic, we'll talk about this tomorrow, just released his tier quarterbacks. He does it every
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
He does. There's only three quarterbacks on the top tier, and C.J. Stroud comes in on the second tier at number 8. If you have a quarterback in Caleb Williams who begins his second season among the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, you think this preseason is full of hope and expectations and hyperbole? Just wait.
Yeah.
Just wait.
That sounds pretty good. I'm all for it. So three quarterbacks are in the top tier.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know one of them won
Mahomes,
the Super Bowl.
Number one.
I'm just curious, is Burrow among the
cool
top
Joe three? Burrow, number two.
Okay.
I think that's exactly right, the right order there.
Yeah, I agree.
Three, I dispute. I would have some dispute with number three. I don't think Josh Allen is the third best quarterback in the
Josh
NFL.
Allen. Yeah, I wouldn't know about that.
Lamar Jackson is fourth.
I was going to say Lamar.
I would put him there.
Yeah.
I would put him Lamar third. Matthew Stafford is after Lamar Jackson, tied with fifth with Justin Herbert, Dustin's guy. Then this is an interesting one, and I understand the premise, but Aaron Rodgers is ranked seventh.
Okay.
That's assuming health, assuming a lot of things.
Assuming he doesn't blow out his Achilles again.
Exactly.
Second place.
C.J. Stroud is number 8. That's quite a leap from obscurity to number 8. Not obscurity, but, you know, nobody expected him to be what he was as a rookie. 9 is Dak Prescott. 10, Jared Goff.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Where's Jalen Hurts?
11, Jalen Hurts. 12, Brock Purdy. One spot ahead of Kirk Cousins at 13.
Did he not see that preseason game? Hey. I'm just kidding. Purdy had a game where he thought he was going to be more than he is, and he needs to stay himself.
And he was pretty bad. 14, Jordan Love. And then
wow,
the good. That's all the
low.
Tier two. It is.
Low for Jordan Love.
No, I don't think so. I think that's probably where I'd have him. Tier three, Tua. Then Trevor Lawrence, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson at 18.
Wow.
Baker Mayfield, 19. Derek Carr, 20. 21, Geno Smith. 22, Russ. Russell Wilson. Then we get to tier four. Tier four, Daniel Jones. Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Gardner Minshew, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Bryce Young, Sam Darnold, and the 30th ranked quarterback is Jacoby Brissett.
Hurt.
Hurt his shoulder.
I don't know how bad he's hurt, but hurt.
Said he's going to be okay, but I think that the way Drake May played last night in the preseason finale for the Patriots, really, if you are a rebuilding team like the Patriots, what excuse do you have for not starting Drake May from day one?
We don't want him to learn to lose because we're going to get killed.
I think, though, in today's NFL, it would make sense. This isn't Boston radio, but I don't know why they would start Brissett, even though he's injured. Now they have the perfect excuse,
right,
to elevate and to play the rookie as soon as possible. So that's an interesting. We can debate some of those things tomorrow, but I think there's no rookies on the list.
Quarterback lists. I love them. You know, none of that is very wrong, but none of that is.
Well, you reacted
gospel.
You reacted to Jordan Love. You thought that was low for 14.
I did. I thought it was low. I just thought, if I'm not mistaken, that he won in the playoffs last year.
Would you have him ahead of Tua?
Maybe. I'd have to see.
Tua's got some serious weaponry.
Well, that's
I mean,
the
he's
problem.
Got some weapons.
That's
and
the problem.
He's got
I
the,
was going to say, I'd have to see how they line up in Green Bay and what that looks like.
I think Tua could be, if he stays healthy, and that might be the biggest concern, Tua is in line to have a better season than Jordan Love.
Well,
what?
I said well.
You don't agree? That's not an answer.
No.
You agree or disagree?
That
Tua is going to have a better season than Jordan Love.
Yeah. I didn't say yes or no.
Well, yes or no?
I got to spend 5 minutes on that one.
Okay.
I just got to see what the Green Bay offense looks like.
The suspense
like.
Is killing me. No. I mean, the weapons are better in Miami.
Oh, I know. I know. They're real good.
Now the Packers do have quite a receiving core.
They got a lot of guys.
They've got four guys that, you know, they are dangerous. I don't know. I think
they've got the flower. Do you like the flower or do you like Mike McDaniel?
I think both are very innovative. I think that's a.
Who do you like more? Brian Flores.
I like probably Matt LaFleur only because he has done it longer. I'm really stuck on if your reaction to Love at 14 was interesting. That was similar to my reaction to Goff at 10. Jared Goff, the 10th best quarterback in the NFL? Really?
I mean, I wouldn't have picked that. But I'm, you know, knowing the way he does his work, I'm sure he's talking to a lot of people and he's getting differing opinions. And
oh, I'm not questioning Mike Sando.
Mike
is exhaustive.
World class.
This is tremendous.
Yeah,
I love the research.
And I'm sure there is research. I'm sure he's talking to a lot of people.
This together so we can argue about it.
And we love to argue. And we will do so with Dan and Lawrence next. Or maybe we won't. Mully and Haw on the score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.